20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Tuesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You know this wonderful man, Justice Mosqueda. Find him on social media at JUMOSQ, acmepackingcompany.com. Justice, we have got a ton to get into. Lots of stuff Packers related. I'm sure we're going to get to all of it, but before we get there, how are you doing?
Doing good. Doing great. I didn't come out here and say Jim Leonard and Raheem Morris were going to be the number one candidates for this job to just never have them take an interview. Oh, you got to believe that. I apologize. Did it too early.
That makes it a lot easier, actually. It's going to be, this is going to be a conversation point for a while as to, well, we'll see if Leonard actually gets a defensive coordinator job somewhere, but
he'll get one.
I think so too.
He's just going to, like, the timing of it was just weird. This cycle, this stuff happens, man. Like, that's why, like, LaFleur, right? LaFleur was the hot name in part because his team didn't make the playoffs in 2019 because he was available from the jump, right? Like, it does kind of hurt you a little bit the longer your team sticks in the race, especially if the team hiring are going to want second interviews and stuff like that, right? Like, we learned now Christian Parker had a second interview with the Cowboys and all that. So, like, if you're part of that process, like, Leonard got the first interview with the Cowboys. Were they going to wait around for the second? Apparently not, right?
Yeah. It will be interesting because Durante Jones now gets the Washington job. Christian Parker gets the Dallas job.
Weird fit. Durante Jones, a Flores guy going under a Quinn defense. I get to take a victory lap for that one, Andy. Remember when we talked this offseason and we were like, it was Super Bowl odds, right? I was like, the one that does not make sense to me is the Commanders because we do this every single time with the Quinn team. Because the Commanders at the time, I think they had a – better, this was pre-Parsons trade, but they had better Super Bowl odds than the Packers. And I was like, look, I get the case for all the other teams. Quinn, we've seen this happen 1,000 times, and he just had to clear house, all that stuff. Like,
not only
you get the shot in the arm like year one, and then people are like, wow, things got so much better. Line will only continue to move up, and then it just falls off almost immediately.
Not only that, but you see CJ Stroud year one, and then there's the bump back year two. Even to an extent, Jordan Love year one, I think a lot of it was due to injuries in year two, but the team kind of came back a little bit and is stuck here as a starter. Like, you have that. And I just, of all the things that Washington did, it felt too much too fast in the wrong pieces for the wrong reasons. Like, all of it.
They burned the assets for old players.
It was all the wrong moves for all the wrong reasons. And yeah, I'm with you. I think you had it first, but you could see this coming. And then they obviously had a ton of injuries, and Jaden Daniels being out a huge chunk of the year obviously played into that, but you could see this coming a mile away.
I think the Jaden Daniels thing, though, like, well, we're not supposed to expect the 170-pound quarterback to get hurt. We can't add that into the equation? We're not allowed to? Okay, all right.
You're allowed to add that into the equation, very much so. It's why I think it's going to be one of those conversations too of Jaden Daniels, Drake May, Caleb Williams, and those picks 1, 2, 3 where they went. I think that's going to be a fun conversation for a long time too. Yeah. Drake May going 3. I mean, Caleb, I understand. I really, really do.
But there were redrafts this offseason because I lost the graphic, but I had the graph. Someone did a, what would it have been, 2024 NFL draft redraft this offseason.
Okay.
And Maine was not only the fifth quarter, Maine went like 25th or something. And I was like, I can't wait to just share this forever. I was spamming it in group chats through like November, but I've lost it now.
You got to find it. That's a keeper. A keeper. You don't want to lose that one because
Bo Nix went like third. Couldn't believe it. Bo Nix.
Oh, yeah. Oh, ahead of Drake May. Good luck with that.
Like third overall. Yes. Ahead of Drake May. Like 20 picks ahead of Drake May. People don't know what the hell they're watching, man. It's crazy.
They do not. Not all the time, that's for sure. Let's start. Well, I want to get to Jonathan Gannon. Obviously, that's going to be the crux of our conversation today. But we did get some Packers news on Monday. Ryan Downard, defensive backs coach, is going to Miami to be their secondary coach. what I would deem as a lateral move. I know it's a slightly different connotation or like just naming convention, but it seems lateral.
Yeah. Well, we could have blocked it, right? In the eyes of the NFL, it's
if he's under contract, I would assume he was under contract. I don't know for sure.
I assume he's under contract. Usually you tack on, like the way the NFL works, right? Is once you get into, you have 2 years left, they start adding that year if they want to keep you around, right? So you basically just perpetually always have 1 year more on your contract than you're never going into a contract year. That's not how it works in the NFL. They, you know, the buyouts, that's part of the business. Green Bay kind of does things differently from a buyout perspective, but like I just got reminded this the other day. Petten was never fired.
Petten? Yeah, he was a free agent, right?
Yeah, he was. They let his contract expire. So what happened was it 21? It was either 20. Jimmy Garoppolo threw 8 passes on him, right, in a playoff game. They ran for like 300 yards, and then they were like, let's not fire him. Let's just wait and see one more year, and then if we need to move off, we'll move off. And then they ended up losing the Tampa game in the NFC Championship the next year.
One of the great what ifs is I didn't obviously want Green Bay to lose that game one way or the other. I really wish San Fran never would have thrown in that game with Jimmy Garoppolo. I really wish they would have handed off every play. They would have won by the same amount. And it would have been, it would have been awesome. I mean, it wouldn't have been awesome, don't get me wrong, but it would have been like, what an ultimate just F you to the other team of like, we literally, it's perfect conditions. It's not a snow game. It's not a, we're just literally, you cannot stop us running the football and we're not going to throw it the entire game. It was like, they could have done it. They could have done it, but.
Yeah. As far as Downard goes, he's passing game coordinator. So like teams treat this stuff differently. Like you almost always have two defensive backs coaches on a team, no matter what. The way Green Bay does it is you have the passing game coordinator and then you have defensive backs coach. At least that's how they're doing it right now before they've done it, you know, cornerbacks and safeties coach, stuff like that. I think Gannon did defensive backs coach and then cornerbacks coach. So I guess I don't know how that works. If, you know, the defensive backs coach oversees everything or if he was coached the safeties and the nickels, I don't know how that worked.
Just breaking news. Yeah, you saw it too.
Spoons.
Packers are going to lose linebackers coach Sean Duggan to the Dolphins, and Jeff Hafley might be as defensive coordinator. They were at Boston College together, but it sounds like he's going to go. You got one of your wishes, Justice. I would assume that would open up the old defensive coordinator for Arizona, whose name escapes me at the moment, to come over as the linebackers coach, potentially if he doesn't get a job elsewhere.
Yeah. Sorry.
Nick Rallis.
There we go. Nick Rallis. Rallis was the linebackers coach for Gannon under when they were together in Philadelphia, when he was the DC there. Rallis has a background with Mike Zimmer. Gannon, I know a lot of people point to the Eberflus stuff because I guess that was more recent, right?
Yep.
But I do think Gannon sees himself more as like a Zimmer guy than anything. If you go look at his initial coaching staff from Arizona, I think 7 of the coaches there had some sort of ties with Zimmer. I wrote a big thing on like his resume. It goes back to what was the Mike Vick got arrested year? That would have been 07, 08?
Sure.
What are those two with the Falcons? So the story with Gannon, right? He's a safety in college football at Louisville, ends up getting hurt, has like the way that has been described in like the press and stuff, right? It's like a Bo Jackson type hip injury. He ends up having to have 2 different surgeries on it. They tell him he's never going to be able to play again. He ends up coaching under a new head coach because Louisville turned over the next year by the name of Bobby Petrino. Bobby Petrino was the guy who left Louisville to take the Falcons job and then didn't even finish out that season, split back and went and took the Arkansas job. Zimmer was the DC that year. And Gannon, you know, followed him up. After that, Gannon ended up going into the St. Louis Rams scouting department, where the Falcons assistant GM became the GM of the Rams at the time.
Sure.
So that's the connection there. And then he ended up jumping back into the league, getting in with not Barry, crap, I'm forgetting his name, the our old DB coach,
Jerry Gray.
Yeah, he was in Tennessee with Jerry Gray, and then they moved up together to Minnesota, where they, well, I guess Gannon. I don't think Gray had any experience with Zimmer, but they, you know, hey, all three of us are back together in this little battery. So he definitely has a lot of deep ties to like the Zimmer tree and stuff like that. They don't do necessarily the same things. I mean, he does get. Like, it's not like he doesn't blitz, and it's not like he doesn't simper. Like, he does a lot of that stuff in certain down and distances slash areas of the field, stuff like that. But think of – people do kind of have a point when they're like, this is kind of a Barry. Sort of, I would push back on a lot of those things. Gannon is a guy who grew up in the system, right? He – did it in Philadelphia, right? Himself, he brought it to Arizona. At minimum, the 5 years he's been in charge of a defense, he's 5 out of 5, right? The difference with Barry is Barry was really a Rod Marinelli guy. So first of all, that's his father-in-law.
Yep.
Joe Barry got his start as a GA at USC under Rod Marinelli, coached with him in Tampa Bay, all that stuff, and Detroit when Marinelli was the head coach. And then Barry learned it from 1 year when he was with the Rams. He was with the Rams for more than a year, but the 1 year under Brandon Staley, when Staley really kind of brought in the quarters revolution into the NFL, and then the Packers were like, okay, come run it in Green Bay. And I have the stats on our site. If you look at sorry about that. Jonathan Gannon will bring the quarters revolution back to Green Bay. That is the article that has just a ton of data on basically what the Packers have been running, what Gannon has been running, all of it relative to the NFL, the NFL average, and what it means moving forward. So Gary's first year in Green Bay, 2021, they were in the quarters family of coverages, which I'm going to call cover four and then cover six. And cover six is cover four on one side, cover two on the other. They were first in the league in that. They ran it over a third of the time. And then the next 2 years, it was 20th and 16th. So, like, the first year of Barry, yes, they did try to run the quarter stuff. And then the next 2 years, they kind of got away with it, started doing more spot drop zone stuff. Halfley was always a spot drop zone guy. I mean, that's the tree that he comes from. We've talked about the Quinn, Carroll, insert whatever. Like, it goes back to, like, Tony Dungy, right? Like, it can be if you want to take it far back enough. That's what Halfley was trying to do. The tricky thing with the spot drop zone stuff is you have to have a pass rush, right? We could see what the before and afters look like in Seattle, which is why I think that defensive line never gets the credit it deserves with the Legion of Boom stuff. That defense started falling apart, and it was because they had a bunch of changes in the secondary. Is because who was up front? Atlanta was another one too. San Francisco this year, like, Saleh isn't calling defenses any different. It's just he didn't have Bosa. Like, yep. That truly is the difference. I think kind of like the end of what Barry did the last 2 years is a lot closer to like what Halfley brought to the table than what Gannon is bringing to the table. Since 2021, so the 5 years that Gannon has ran a defense. I know he didn't call plays in Arizona. The 2 years in Philadelphia and the 3 years in Arizona. No team has called cover four more than Gannon's teams, right? And it's, that really isn't something that Halfley lived in at all, right? Like, if Halfley was going into quarters family, he was going to play cover six, right? And the way Halfley protected himself was playing – cover six, because he really wanted to be a cover two and cover three guy, right? Which is old school spot drop zone. Yep. The way he kind of protected himself was playing cover six. So you usually play quarters to a three receiver set and then cover two to whatever you got on the back end, whether it's a tight end or a guy who split out. Changing what the pitcher looks like pre and post snap. So like they would run inverted cover two, where Now the deep safety is the guy who's playing in the flat, and the corner who's lined up right at the line of scrimmage is actually bailing 15 yards back and playing the deep half, right? That's kind of how he protected himself and got to play some of these more basic coverages, which honestly, the like Quinn Tree, Sala, all that, like, should probably be doing that. Should probably be doing that more. Like, you should probably be doing that more.
But I thought Howell could have done it a little bit more, to be honest. I liked it early in the year, but I don't know. They're neither here nor there, but I actually thought he could have done a little bit more of it.
So, yeah, Gannon, if you're comparing him to the league average over the last 5 years, man coverage, he's between 24th and 25th. Old school spot drop zone, he's 26th and 27th. Again, that is where the last 2 years of Barry and the 2 years of Halfley, that's where they lived, right? And they're toning, at least Gannon's resume says that gets toned way down, and then what gets turned way up is cover four and cover six. There's also like the data is bad at splitting out what is like, they call it like country quarters, right? Where it's spot drop zone, but it is cover four. And then you have the cover seven family, which is like basically a completely different way to think about football. Like if you think about like coverage calls, right? Like it's not going to be cover four. It's not going to be cover six. Like it's going to be, hey, we get three by one. We're going to play cut on the backside, and we're going to play Meg on the front. And we're going to play Jimmy Pony on the line of scrimmage. And these are going to be our empty checks. And this is what we check to if we get this look. And, oh, who's on the line of scrimmage, like as far as the receivers go, actually matters to us. Because the guy who's on the line of scrimmage is probably the guy who's going to run a deep route. So if I'm reading 2-3 and I'm first the flat, maybe we have different checks based off of who is on and off the ball, right? And then you have different things where it's like, well, this guy is going to the flat. Is it fast? Is it slow? Right? Like, is, you know, you get all these sort of things.
A lot of variables.
I don't know if you could link it or any, or like put it in the description or something like that. But we talked about like the Carl Scott clinic that he did when he was the DB coach at Alabama. He's the DB coach in Seattle now. I know he's in the Super Bowl and all that stuff. If jobs are still available, I think he's probably going to get one. If not, he might have to wait until his team gets knocked out of the playoffs a little earlier. He does a really good job in about, I mean, it is an hour, but I mean, it's a completely different way to think about football. And it definitely not what Green Bay has been doing recently. I mean, basically it's a lot of off coverage. It is a lot of quarters. It's less country quarters than even what Barry did when he was here. Basically what you're trying to do is you're trying to sort route combinations and then get real tight on the coverage. So you're not covering grass like you would in normal spot drop zone. You're like, okay, we're waiting for the route combination to sort out, and then I'm snapping to it immediately.
Yeah. Which makes sense. I like that version of it. Just to tidy things up really quick, just to go back to where we started. Any parting thoughts on Ryan Downard or Duggan leaving the team and what that opens up for Green Bay?
So if you look at his first Eagles staff, they only had three on-field assistants. They had a line coach, they had a linebackers coach, and they had a DBs coach.
That was interesting.
So
there's a way for Green Bay to go cheaper on defensive staff. I'm just kidding.
I don't think they actually would. From like a numbers perspective, like I don't think that's the issue. I do think if they play a 3-4, right, which is then probably the next part of the conversation, right? We just talked about coverages. If they played a three, most of the quarters teams play 3-4. You don't have to. He didn't. When he was DC in Philadelphia for 2 years. But Arizona was a 3-4 team. Yep. When he was in Arizona, he had a D-line coach, outside linebackers coach, a linebackers coach, which was inside linebackers coach, a DB coach, and then a cornerbacks coach, right? So he had five on the rim. Whether it's like a true defensive backs coach, or they'll just call it like assistant defensive backs coach underneath Ansley, I do expect them to like at least promote a guy into the next level. They like Wendell Davis, right? Like he's an analyst for the Packers, and he has a defensive backs background, right? I could see him being named like defensive backs coach, right? They could go outside. They could go outside the building, but I don't know if they will. I do think Arizona, when you were talking about Arizona specifically, I do think that the DC coming in and being his linebackers coach makes a lot of sense. He spent the last 5 years with him, and there's the Zimmer crossover stuff too, right? So when I was watching the Arizona film, I definitely was like, well, these line, the team's not very talented, but the linebackers are a lot better coached than what we have. So yeah,
no, Nick Rallis, all of 32 years old, turns 33 in July.
Goodness gracious.
What a jerk.
He's, I can't remember how old I am. No, we're the same age. I just have to think now. Really, like after 25, I was just like, I don't care.
Yeah, yeah, me too. Definitely have to think. Yeah, it was close. But yeah, that's crazy. Obviously very young coach. But yeah, I think if they could get him in at linebackers coach, that'd be amazing. And I'm with you probably, as long as Ansley stays, I would just expect Ansley to kind of oversee the defensive backfield. And then, like you said, promote Davis to assistant or something like that. I think that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, and the other thing too, right? So if they go into a 3-4, you're probably going to want to split outside linebackers and defensive line because you're going to have five guys who are starting with you. What's his name? Obosi, the D-line, the assistant D-line coach.
Ogabasi. Ogabasi.
I apologize for messing up the name. I don't know if he's going to end up going with Halfley, but he's their assistant defensive line coach. I think he's the only guy who holds the, you know, assistant title in Green Bay, which is usually their, that's how they declare, like, this is the next guy who is going to get promoted, right? Yeah. I don't think Covington's going to get a DC job. If he does, good for him. So maybe, you know, he ends up being the defensive line coach and Covington ends up being the outside linebackers coach or something like that.
I bet Ogabasi goes with, I bet he goes with half.
I mean, it makes sense. They brought him with, from BC, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
I bet he does.
So,
yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this all shakes out. We still have the report from Rob Domofsky as well that there was another potential move to be made, and we have not seen that yet. So, could be some changes on both sides. And, of course, we have Adam Stanovich interviewing with the Titans as well.
I was about to say, I think that might be the move, which, like, processing coaches is always very hard, right? We're seeing it with Matt Nagy right now and all of the media that is being put out about Nagy where, like, oh, Andy Reid really thinks he should be a head coach, but under no circumstances does he want him returning as an offensive coordinator, right? I wouldn't be surprised if they wanted to move off of him. And, again, Getsy and Hackett are in the building. And –
Vrabel as well.
I think the other guys would get a better look than Vrabel, though. I really do.
You think what?
I think the other guys will get a look before Vrabel.
I think I think you're probably right.
Yeah. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that's the move. I know people are like, move Steno back to offensive line coach. No, dude, death sentence. We've talked about this before. Like, if you're a running backs coach, offensive line coach, or tight end coach in the NFL, and anyone gives you an offensive coordinator position, you hang on that to dear life because those are dead-end jobs, right? Like, you can look at I'm going to pull up his name. Bobby Turner from the 49ers. So he's a great example of this. He is 76 years old. He is still a running backs coach. He came into the NFL in 1995 with the Denver Broncos. So, like, all those guys.
Look at Ben Sermons in Green Bay, right? Like, dude's been there.
Well, look at this. So he come 95 to 2009 with the Denver Broncos, right? So all of those 1,000-yard rushers, Terrell Davis, we find him, you know, off of the trash heap, all that stuff, turn him into a 1,000-yard rusher. He gets all that. He was with Washington from 2010 to 2013. So that's what Albert Morris is still driving, like, a beat-up car, and we're getting him to 1,000 yards. The Atlanta Falcons team that went to the Super Bowl. And then now he's in San Francisco. And I get that he's 76 now, but, like, you could be the best running backs coach in the world, and there is no promise that you are ever going to be more than a running backs coach. And the same is kind of – it's less true on the offensive line, but there's still not that many, like, Mike Munchak's and stuff around the league who actually get that opportunity. So I Steno in his pressers probably leans in way too much into, like, I don't help the offensive line. I am the offensive coordinator. Like, he really does like coming out and saying that. And then everyone around the team is like, I mean, he's still helping the offense. offensive line. He doesn't want to be known as an offensive line coach who has a title promotion.
Oh, title, yeah.
Right. Titans is interesting because he has ties with Robert Saleh, right? So, like, they both came from the Niners. Stenovich was assistant offensive line coach when Matt hired him. The Packers let James Campen leave, right? They never fired James Campen. They let him leave to be assistant head coach of the Browns. Yeah.
And now he's back as a scout in Green Bay.
Yeah, which is interesting because he doesn't really like – is he a scout? So he's working with the front – I haven't kept tabs
on. I think he is.
That makes sense because he doesn't have ties to the coaching
staff. No, I think it's on the scouting side, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole thing of who ends up like, and of course, in classic Green Bay fashion, like we have heard nothing. We have heard nothing on, and we're not going to hear anything on Goody or Matt being extended. We have not heard anything.
There's been times I was at the combine. The Packers did not have a quarterback coach named. That's in like a month, right? So don't hold your breath. They don't like talking to us.
Some of the stuff is just wild that they do with that.
They wouldn't broadcast the games if they didn't have to. Right? Like, seriously. I really do believe that.
You're not wrong.
I wrote this thing because one of the Cowboys beat writers kind of talked about the Cowboys process. And
yeah, I stole this from you. I did talk about it yesterday, but go ahead.
Why they went with Christian Parker instead of Jonathan Gannon, which, like, some of the stuff, I think they just looked at Jonathan Gannon and were like, oh, Eberflus, we just got burned by Eberflus, right? Yeah.
PTSD for sure.
But the reason I wrote it up is because I know like there's so much more meat. Like Jerry will just tell you. I know like they've leaked their actual draft board four different times.
Can you imagine if the draft board got out in Green Bay? Can you even imagine?
They'd shut down the city. They'd shut down the city. They'd fire off at EMP. electrical blackout, dog. Nothing is coming in or out. Brown County is off the map. Would never happen. But I know people who cover the Cowboys. Like, yeah, Jerry will just tell you. Like, he'll tell you, hey, this is our draft board. It's Zach Martin, Ryan Chizier, Johnny Manziel. Look out for it. Johnny Manziel is a possibility. All that stuff. I know people who have gone into their scouting department and just like watch film for like draft prospects. That's not happening in Green Bay. That's not happening in Green Bay at all.
Not at all. I think part of the renovation in Lambeau Field and all this stuff is basically to make it Fort Knox so that nobody can get it in or out of their draft room one way or the other. It's like seven.
They're a paranoid bunch. And I don't think it helps them in any way. They just like being paranoid.
It's what they've done forever. And I just think they're going to keep it that way. I think that's all it is. Overarching, Jonathan Gannon, you've obviously talked a lot about, you know, some of the scheme differences, you know, whether they could go with a 4-3 or 3-4, a lot more quarters coverage, you know, overall, how are you feeling about the hire? What are your expectations for the hire? Do you think it can be a top 10 defense under Jonathan Gannon? How are you feeling about it? We'll be right back. Hey friends, the big game is almost here, and there's no better way to cash in during America's biggest sporting event than Prize Picks, where it always feels good to be right. And since the big game is right around the corner, it also means that it's your last chance to get into the football action before next season. So close the season out with Prize Picks by getting $50 instantly in lineups when you play your first $5 lineup. Now, we've been talking about Prize Picks all season long, and what I've really enjoyed are the stories from fans who've played Daily Fantasy for the first time, who've won a big pick, and who've told me how much they enjoy playing Prize Picks. Now, I've heard some awesome winning stories all season long, and you still have time to get in this football season to get some big wins with Prize Picks. Now, with Prize Picks, you don't need to wait until next year's fantasy draft to keep playing fantasy. Prize Picks lets you play fantasy football every week, even in the playoffs. Pick your favorite players and win when they hit their projections every week, no draft required. So join millions of users and sign up for America's number one sports app, Prize Picks. And right now, you can download the Prize Picks app and use code Packaday to get $50 in lineups when you play your first $5 lineup. That's code Packaday to get $50 in lineups when you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks. It's good to be right.
Yeah, I mean, they have talent. You have Xavier McKinney, Evan Williams, Javon Bullard. Again, I think they think the cornerbacks are better than the fans think. Their numbers are better than what the fans think. I understand the fans are mad. I worry about linebacker, if especially in this game. Buddy, Isaiah McDuffie, this is a, you know, you're going to have to be able to play coverage and go run and chase some stuff. Like, we're going to have to, you know, sometimes a slot receiver is running a drag, and that linebacker has to keep up with them in a foot race. And Isaiah McDuffie playing Mike worries me a lot in that situation. I don't think that playing this scheme is the reason why the team would give Quay, you know, the $15 million per year contract that he's probably going to end up getting on the open market. Cooper, I think his spot is interesting because they play a lot of Penny. So
yes,
we played Penny under Joe Barry. And what Penny basically is on the line of scrimmage, it's a 3-4 defense, but you're going to take out one of the inside linebackers to play the slot defense. So like Bullard would come on the field for Cooper in that spot. So Cooper would be on the bench, but Duffy's playing Mike. I don't like that. I don't like that at all. This is one of the many reasons why I'm like, we should probably be a 4-3 front. I understand a lot of these teams like to base out of 3-4. I would like to be a 4-3 front. I would like to do that.
Spoiler alert for tomorrow's episode. I think it's going to be tomorrow's episode, but I talked to Cody Alexander, who, you know, does an unbelievable job breaking down the tape. He did a huge thing on the Cardinals and Gannon. And one of his first things is like, if they do go to a 3-4, it's probably time to move on from Isaiah McDuffie. He's like, in this defense, he's like, there might not be a spot for Isaiah McDuffie in this particular defense. So he was very much on the same wavelength.
Well, I don't know if they're going to do it, man.
They've given
McDuffie every opportunity over Hopper over the last 2 years to play the Mike slot. So like, he might be our green dot in you know, minimum week one next year. So I wouldn't hold my breath on that. Line of scrimmage, I think we're going to have to add a starting nose tackle no matter what, right? And if you add a starting nose tackle, I'm a whole lot less worried about this interior defensive line in general.
Correct.
Because if it's, you know, Wyatt's playing the three and then Kobe Wood and Carl Brooks is playing the other three, like, I'm not, especially Brinson looks solid. Like, he's LVN. Your – it's not happening, dude. People keep bringing this – where they're like, well, we could just kick LVN and not – So when
half we put a true 3-4, you don't think like LVN could be more inside than outside in a 3-4?
Because he's gonna get double teamed. The safeties are lining up in Milwaukee.
Could it possibly be any worse than Carl Brooks getting double teamed this past year?
I don't know, man. But I just don't think you can do it. Like, LVN was a 3-4 outside linebacker under Barry. He was a 3-4 outside linebacker when Halfley played 3-4 looks. I think you can kick him in and, you know, pass rushing down still. Yes. He did that this
Which is what
year.
They'll probably do.
Right. But that's like 6 snaps a game. What's he going to do the other 40, right? The other 40
he has to play outside linebacker. Even if you did kick him inside, depending on what happens with Gary and Enagbare, if Gary and Enagbare are gone in some weird way, if you don't have LVN as the other outside linebacker, if he's kicking inside, what are you going Baron Sorrell in that situation? Like, it just, it ends up being a lot more. Yeah. So
you spent two mid round picks on outside linebackers. Use them. Right. I do think the tricky thing with the outside linebacker thing is there's so much sim pressures and stuff in this. Now they do send five a lot when they're in Penny and they're in 3-4, which is kind of how those defenses work, right? You don't have guys line up on the line of scrimmage to bail out. You can do it to bluff it every once in a while, but you line those guys up because you want them actually blitzing, right? So even though it's not a blitz from depth, you're down a coverage player. So when they want to rush four out of those looks, you're not dropping out one of the interior defensive linemen, the 300-pounders, the three of them that you're going to line up. So if you're rushing four, that's LVN or Micah Parsons dropping out, right? Which, again, another reason why I'm like, no, I would just like them to – I would like them to just go.
Preston Smith is a free agent, so if they need to get –
I bet he is.
I can't wait until we see LVN start dropping more in coverage and we get the whole Preston Smith thing all over again. Just
Well, the good news is I know Gannon's
what's defense old is new.
Can check the stuff. I know Gannon's defense. I know Gannon's defenses can check the stuff.
Yes.
And that was the issue with Barry, is that he didn't really know how this whole thing worked. Gannon had 5 years in it. Barry had 1 year in it. The other thing, too, is, and people aren't going to want to hear this, quarters fronts, you're down the gap because you're playing two high safeties. So what does that mean? Say there's so two wide receivers, right? Corners are on them. You have your two high safeties, right? So you're down to seven players on the offensive side. So if you're playing base, you're probably either getting two back with a fullback on the field, or you're getting a tight end. There's eight gaps. You have seven players. How do you handle that? And the way you handle that is, we are run first defenders. We Jimmy Pony. And we hold everything at the line of scrimmage so that the linebackers and safeties can get into the fit. And, you know, they spill stuff to the sideline, all that stuff. We hold our point at the line of scrimmage so that those guys can get into the fit later in after the down, after they've checked, hey, it's not play action. Right. So, yes, we are talking about making Micah Parsons a run first defender on early downs. And I know fans are not going to want to hear that. That is the reality of this defense. You have to do it that way. It's the only way that works. If not, you're like dashed, like home run calls, 15 yard runs. It's not the, hey, we just lost six. It's we lost 15. The other thing I'd point out about Gannon, we pointed this out when the Packers played the Cardinals this past year, and fans were complaining about, and I don't mean that as like a pejorative, like, oh, the fans are whining. That's not what I mean. Fans were talking about how slow that offense was working, and it was because they were doing a whole lot of push motions, reloads, all sorts of stuff to try to get like every piece of data that you can from that defense before the snap, because they do disguise stuff pretty well. That is consistent throughout how teams played that Cardinals defense. So what that means is making games shorter, right? Because the longer you're at the line of scrimmage, running motion, stuff like that, it's making games shorter. I know people hate it, but I do think Matt ultimately views football and is like, I want to turn this into an execution battle. Yeah. I would like to get one more point than you, have you chase that point and make this game as short as possible. So
for the notoriously famous, well-executed Green Bay Packers team that never makes mistakes and executes so well in clutch moments.
This is why I was like, the most important things are going to be offensive line coach and linebacker coach, because those were the two spots where we did not execute well enough. Did not execute well enough to be a bend don't break team, but this is definitely a bend don't break hire. 100%. 100%. Yeah. I think Matt would say this is a bend don't break hire and say it with his chest puffed out.
Yeah, right. Because he's a bend but don't break coach. I mean, listen, we saw Petty get more conservative once Matt got here. He was more aggressive under Mike. Joe Barry was specifically a very bend but don't break coach. And I honestly don't think Jeff Hafley was as aggressive as he probably wanted to be because Matt. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we can disagree on that maybe. But
that whole tree just sits back and drop seven into coverage and then people pick it apart. Right. So I don't know. But I agree with your other points. For sure. Yeah.
So I just think it's a Matt thing. And I think he clearly wants to go in the same direction again. So let me ask you this. You're going to play more cover four. Correct me if I'm wrong. One of the huge benefits of cover four is that you're not giving up explosive plays. Arizona was very good at not giving up explosive. Not only explosive plays, explosive attempts. Like, teams didn't even basically attempt explosive, you know, throws down the field as much against Arizona. That's obviously an advantage to this defense. However, Green Bay, under Jeff Hafley, already was pretty damn good at that, at not allowing explosive plays. And they were good against the run for the most part. I would say, okay, that I thought his first year they were good against the run. Second year, there were some hiccups. I will go with that. But
our defensive line died every fourth quarter.
That's
really the story. We lost Kenny Clark in September, and those starting defensive nose tackles do not pop out of nowhere in the NFL.
So my point where I was going with this is, all right, awesome. It's going to allow fewer explosive plays, but now Micah, amongst others, are becoming run first defenders. There's more potential issues in run defense.
I do like when they're nickel and
yes, of course, you know, yes, of course, long, of course.
Like they're still going to get after it.
Yeah, but you have to eat your vegetables. You got to get into third and long before you can you can do that. What's going to be the advantage as you're looking, you know, from a Packers fan standpoint of like, oh, this is what I can now look forward to this defense being better at because Jonathan Gannon's here and we're going in this direction with maybe more cover four.
I do think it's a, even though you're playing two high safeties, it is a run first defense, which I know we've talked about like on the line of scrimmage, but you're able to get those safeties in the fit. So you are technically right. You're not getting nine in the fit immediately at the snap of the ball, but you are getting nine in the fit.
Yeah.
At some point, which is different. That's different than when you have a post safety and that guy has no responsibility in the run game other than, hey man, if something breaks loose, I got to get this guy on the ground. Like that's really it. And the cornerbacks. I mean, that's their role too, for the most part. So you are getting an extra run defender in the box. That was always my point about the Joe Barry thing when they were like, because I think just people didn't understand the defense well enough when people were like, oh man, Joe Barry is getting killed. Like we got to call like more run stopping defenses. And I'm like, dude, this was the run. Like you can't like short of having guys line up in every single gap and then just having the two cornerbacks, you know, hanging
on
out
an island.
On an island. Like this was the run. Like this is the run stopping defense. They just weren't good at it under Barry. So I do think it'll help with that. All of the, I won't say the short, because you, in the quarters family, you do play the zone soft because you want to use the sideline as a help defender.
Yeah.
So they do play those a little looser, but like the stuff over the middle of the field that you have issues with, I'm trying to think of a game specifically that they just got like peppered and underneath stuff. But like there, a lot of like spot drop zone defenses, it's like, oh, if you run in this spot in the field, like you just get it. Right. It's a lot of, I call it like battleship football, right? It's like, if you guess what we're in and we're in it and you run the right route into a certain zone, like you just get it. Congrats. Like handshake. Right. I know Richard Sherman's talked about this before where he's like, some of these like closest defender metrics are not good because like the offense just gets that one. Like that's not on a defender. That's on basically a play caller, really. In tighter coverage situations where you're sorting the stuff out and it's, you know, your linebacker isn't thinking, hey, I got to run a hook. I have to protect the hook. A guy crosses my face. That's fine because that's not my job. That's very different. And that was a spot drop zone example. That's very different than if you're playing quarters or something where you're, I relate to three. So if the running back swings out and a guy comes in, I'm free to take that guy on the crosser and stick to him like that. Right. Which is one point where we talked about how Isaiah McDuffie doesn't quite fit
right
from like a personnel standpoint. So I do think that stuff helps out. One of the big issues with this defense is, you can kind of leave these guys out to dry, the cornerbacks out to dry on corner routes. For whatever reason, they call them seven cuts. I know seven is supposed to be a corner route, you know, in normal terminology. I don't know why they call them
vernacular.
Cuts. Yeah. That was one of the things we brought up when we played the Eagles, right? Where I was like, hey, man, outside, we got outside breakers open like all game. And then Evero is another guy. He coaches the Panthers, right? And we got those two back-to-back, and we scored 20 points in those two games combined. And I'm like, man, we're getting – these outside routes are open. We're not running any of them, right? And it took Matt a while to kind of – again, I always bring it up as like it's not the first tool in the toolbox that he goes to, but he did get to it after that two-game stretch. That is a weakness. They just kind of like – are like that throw is really hard, and a lot of quarterbacks don't know how to do it. So if – we're going to be – there's no defense that can protect everything. If we're going to do it, then, hey, make this really tough, long throw to the field side on a corner route, and then if you can connect on it, we still stop you for 15 yards and it doesn't go for a touchdown because you hit the sideline, right? So that's just kind of the thought process behind it. I've had a lot of people ask me about like the corners and if we're going to look for like new corners and stuff like that. I mean, I don't think Hobbs fits with what they want to do. Valentine's issue has never been that he doesn't know how to move. I think Keyshawn moves pretty well. He can't do the stuff like he did against Chicago both times, or the first two games, I guess, where he just like, hey, I'm going to break a rule and I'm going to go over here. If you do that in this system, that's six every single time, right? Yeah. We saw it early on with Barry where like Justin Jefferson would have like 100 yards and people were like, oh, he killed Jair. And I'm like, Jair did not have him, right? It was, Darnell Savage did not do what he was supposed to do, and he gets wide open for 35 yards. It's definitely a thinking man's defense. You have to communicate a lot. To Gannon's credit, I think Dyer posted this, right? That
yep.
They had like six or 10 coverage busts, which
I think
like
was 10,
the third least in the NFL. That is a credit to Gannon, who, again, defensive back background, all that stuff. So, yeah, that's kind of that's what we're in for. I think that's what we're going to see.
What would you what's the Justice Mosqueda letter grade overall on the Jonathan Gannon hire?
I mean, honestly, I don't know how he like, because, again, it is. Have there been defensive coordinators hired who have called plays before? I'm not counting Flores. Flores went back.
Oh, Denard Wilson.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Who coached under Gannon, by the way? He was his DB coach in Philadelphia.
Other than that, I don't think so.
Yeah. So like we're comparing a guy who's actually done it to get, I have no shame with putting my, I put a thumbs down emoji on Twitter when the Gannon stuff came out originally, not that he was hired, but that he was brought in for an interview. Most of that had to do with the fact that a transition to a 3-4, right? I don't love that if you haven't caught up on that yet. But I'll put my hand up and say, like, I don't know what Christian Parker is going to be. I don't know what Durante Jones is going to be.
Right? Yeah.
These guys haven't done it before. So I don't know. Like, the market isn't in a good spot. I mean, would I have waited for like a Leonard? Would I have waited for a Carl Scott? I probably would have. I don't think I would have been worried enough about the prospect of losing Gannon that I wouldn't have interviewed those two guys. Because I do think that we've seen, like, again, I know Carl Scott can coach DBs. Like, what he's done this year, like, a lot of those guys in Seattle were shaky to start the season. And now they're nailing down on guys. I know they gave a bunch of points this past weekend, but on the whole, on the season, they've been really good. Leonard has a resume. It's not the first time he's going to be calling a defense, right? It is at the NFL level, but it's not the first time he's going to be calling a defense. So, I mean, if anything, if we're grading anything on a curve and what the other possibilities were going to be and stuff like that, I would have waited and at least heard those guys out and not been super worried about Gannon.
I do wonder, obviously don't know about anybody else. I do wonder how much them interviewing Jim Leonard, what was it, 4 years ago, gave them enough of a picture to say, we know what he is. We know what he's going to bring to the table. They've basically, maybe they felt like they've already interviewed him and they liked him a lot. And maybe they still like Gannon more. That's my hope, is that regardless of what it was, that they just like Gannon a lot and they didn't want to lose him.
I know one thing people asked, cause I got some people that were like, Gannon's agent hosed LaFleur. I'm like, it's the same agent. It's Trace Armstrong, Athletes First. Right. And like Trace has a bunch of guys. Like Trace is one of the more powerful agents in the industry. Yeah. Right. Trace represented McCarthy. Trace represented.
Is the same Trace Armstrong that played in the NFL? I have never seen. Yeah, I assumed it was, but Dolphins too, right?
Yeah. But like the connection there, right? Like Gannon was under Eberflus. Eberflus is friends with Matt. They're all Athletes First guy. Like they probably all get together for some sort of like corporate dinner at the Super Bowl and at the combine and stuff like that. Like that's how, you know, you get people to rub elbows within the company and all that stuff. So I'm sure they've known each other, right? But I don't think that that's a primary driver of any of this. Like, a lot of guys are athletes first in Green Bay, like, historically. Rodgers was athletes first. Love is athletes first. He's represented by Mulugeta. I think Mulugeta alone in Green Bay has Willis, Enagbare, McKinney, right? Clay Matthews was the athletes first guy. Like, when you see that stuff, like, aren't but like three agencies like actually running stuff at the tippy top level of the NFL. There's a lot of guys who are like lawyers and then also for some reason like lose money being an NFL agent and they just like doing that. But as far as like the people making like good money representing players, there's like three agencies, dude.
Yeah.
And coaches, same thing.
Yeah. Speaking of those, anything else on Gannon before we move off?
I will say, like, the dude, moment of silence for the people who wanted like central casting leader of men defensive coordinator. Not happening.
Aggressively and not happening.
People get the combo of Halfley in his presser in Miami basically saying, or he did say, he was like, I was basically the head coach of the defense in Green Bay. And then the stuff from, I think it was Demoski, that said that Matt liked that Gannon had sit in the big chair.
Correct.
No one is beating the Matt is head coach of offense and hires a head coach of defense.
And a head coach of special teams really too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't talk to kickers. So
yeah.
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 But yeah. I mean, again, this was one of my points about the assistant coaches things. I'm like, they will spend on those two spots and have historically, because they've only been offensive play caller head coach. We've never done the, we're going to be CEO head coach and we're going to pay a whole ton of assistants and all this stuff. And they've avoided buyouts, which is part of the coaching salary.
Do you think the goofy quirkiness of Jonathan Gannon is it anything, or is it much ado about nothing?
Dude, I don't think people realize like how many Gannons there are in football.
But Cody Alexander said almost the similar thing. He's like, you get all these nerdy people that are in a room, like, you know, watching film all day, and then you get them all of a sudden in front of a camera, and there's like, they don't know what the hell they're doing in most cases.
No. Like, we know, like, Mike McDaniel is a guy who kind of like broke into it, right? He's in front of the camera all the time because he was a head coach. He's been offensive coordinator for a long time. But yeah, dog, there's a whole lot of, like, there's way more people who look like me and Andy Herman who are coaching in the NFL and at high levels of college football than guys who look like Dan Campbell, right? For example, it's not really how this pipeline works. Like, I have a buddy who he coaches at, well, I can say it. He coaches at Oregon. But I knew him way before he coached at Oregon. He sleeps with a CPAP, dog. Glasses, thick ones, right?
Love it.
So, yeah, I mean, welcome to the NFL, baby. This is all ran by the nerds. This is, it's nerds across the board. It's oops, all nerds. We've almost gotten players out of it entirely.
I lost it at oops, all nerds. That is oops, fantastic. Speaking of the coaching, as we just move on and kind of wrap things up here a little bit too, sounds like one Rich Bisaccia might be staying in Green Bay. Domovsky basically said on the radio that seems to be that way as of now. You've talked about it. We've talked about it. We don't need to go in depth with it, but it seems like it might be trending in that direction. I continue to get yelled at for basically saying the same thing of like, I would probably move on. I think Green Bay is going to keep him. And lo and behold, looks like Green Bay might keep him.
If you want to cut Bisaccia to lower the, if you're, we've talked about the B word, right? Budget, as far as coaching goes, right? If you're like, hey, Bisaccia costs a lot of money. We've learned the lessons that we want from Bisaccia. We could probably pay a guy a third of what he's making to do relatively the same job and
get the same results.
Right. Because of the limitations that the roster construction puts it on for like draft and develop, all that stuff. And we're going to use that money and go get us a real offensive line coach. To me, still stupid that the Packers are operating on a coaching budget, right? But that makes a whole lot more sense than just like firing Rich because you're not supporting the return game and you don't care about field goal block. Like, kickers are independent contractors. They care about punt. They care about kickoff. They're good on punt. They're good on kickoff. That's the story of special teams in Green Bay. I really do think that it's that simple. And if you want to get mad about that, get mad about that. But I don't think the team cares. I don't think the team cares that the fans are mad. Like when they talk about like, hey, we got to ignore the outside noise and like we'll still take the quarterback when we don't need the quarterback because we can't ever not have a quarterback. Like, guys, the fans are the outside noise. That's what they're talking about.
This
whole offseason is the Ted Thompson conversation with the
toilet bowl.
Yeah, it was like Brett Favre will take you to the Super Bowl. Aaron Rodgers is going to take you to the toilet bowl. He's just like, yeah, whatever, don't care. Like, they think they're on the right path. They really do. The team thinks like we're good. We got to get healthy. We're still in the playoffs. Playoffs are relatively random.
Well, we know that because they just extended the powers that be for the foreseeable future. They clearly did not desire any change.
Yeah.
And but like Bisaccia
people still couldn't believe that. And then they're not going to believe Bisaccia and they're not going to believe when the cornerbacks come back either. Like, yeah.
I threw up in my mouth a little bit when you said corners. I also, you know what, Bisaccia or not, can we learn the lesson that special teams matters? That we just saw it in the playoff or the NFC championship game again, where a dude muffs the punt. Yeah. It matters.
That one is so crazy to me. Because Andy, they paid Tutu Atwell $10 million.
Was he active? Is he not hurt?
He was inactive.
Just a they clean paid him inactive.
$10 million.
That's wild.
Knowing that he was probably only going to be able to be like a punt returner and like a third down guy. Because the Rams are similar to like Green Bay. Like Puka's not a small guy. I know Kupp's not on the team anymore, but Kupp wasn't a small guy. Devontae Adams isn't a small guy. And they play all these three tight ends. Like they want to be big, heavy. Big heavy on the offensive side. Tutu was never going to really fit in offensively on a down-to-down basis there. And you paid $10 million for a returner, and you didn't even have him active, and then you buffed the punt in the NFC Championship game. Like,
not a good look.
No. I'm sure, like, you know how Green Bay is looking at that? We didn't spend the $10 million. What a dumb way to use money.
Like, we'll still muff the punt. We'll still muff the punt, but we didn't spend $10 million to do it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I know people have brought up what his name. I haven't actually heard it said out loud. Wetgen? Is that the kid from Iowa?
Yeah. I know like five prospects, and somehow he's one of the guys I know.
Packers fans will not drop it. I'm like, dog, he is 5'8 and like 175 pounds or something like
that. That's so their type. So their type.
Yeah. Yeah. With a 30 pound weight strapped on his ass and high heels. Yeah. He'd be their type. Yeah, there's a punt blocker for Ole Miss. He's like 6'9". He's blocked like 10 kicks at the college level. I don't think we're going to go after him either.
Listen, spend spots. Draft Wetgen, put him in high heels and a 30-pound weight, and I still like the return game better. I still might like the return game better. I'm all for it. If that's what you got to do, that's what you got to do.
Yeah. I mean, look, I wouldn't hate a punt returner. I promise. I swear to God, I wouldn't hate a punt returner. Do I think they're going to have a punt returner when they already have Jaden Reed and Matthew Golden, who are much smaller than the receivers that Matt likes to play, especially on the outside on non-third down situations? Probably not. I don't think it's going to happen. Can I give a little plug here?
Do it.
So our buddy Tyler Brook went to the Shrine Bowl and did a bunch of coverage for the prospects there. He has it up on his YouTube page. I believe it's Best Available. If you guys want to go check that out. Obviously, Eric Galco, dude I used to work with, the XFL, he runs the game there now. A couple of prospects to pay attention to because this is coming out Tuesday, right?
Yep, correct.
I believe the Shrine Bowl is happening. The actual game is going to be happening. I think it's like NFL Network at like 5 or 6. Or I guess 6, 7 Central. On Tuesday, a couple of guys to pay attention to: Dante Corleone, the big old nose tackle out of Cincinnati, We've talked about him a couple of times. Daryl Jackson from Florida State just came in massive. Just they don't make humans that big. Those two guys are expected to go top 100 range. So I think both of them could possibly be in play for second, third round in Green Bay. Dominique Jackson, I wrote a full scouting report, had a bunch of clips from his college all 22 and stuff like that up at APC. He's like one of two draftable outside cornerbacks there at the event. He's probably going to be like probably like a third round guy, which I know people are like, what are you talking about third round right now? And it's January. That's our second highest pick. We have one selection in the top 80 picks in the upcoming draft. This is what we're focusing on. I know we like Gronowski, the quarterback out of Iowa. I think he's – I've seen reports that he's been doing well down at Trumbull. He's been getting coached by Sean Mannion, who is the offensive coordinator of the West team this year. So doing Galco a solid here. He didn't ask me to do this. He's way too busy to ask me for favors this week.
Great. He deserves it either way.
He's a good guy. I called him.
Say nice things about Tyler Brook. I'm a little bit upset about that, but I'm just
kidding. Bum. No, I mean, maybe for the way he acted when the Hoosiers won the national championship. I don't like him rubbing it in my face. No, I called Galco the week before Shrine Bowl, and I just wanted to talk like defensive tackle prospects with him. And he was like, what are you doing? Do you know how busy I am? get off the phone. So yeah, that call lasted about 5 seconds. But go check out the Shrine Bowl. They got a lot of guys. Guys who are going to be drafted high in the draft. Brian Parker is another one, the kid out of Duke. He might end up being the top center prospect drafted in this class. He was a right tackle for Duke, is getting converted into center. I believe he played center the entire week there at the Shrine Bowl. The only center expected to get drafted above him at this point is I'm spacing on his name, the kid from Auburn. With the torn ACL, which is pretty much how I'm going to refer to him this entire offseason. Connor Liu.
Okay.
Connor Liu. And he might not even be available by the time the Packers are on the clock the first time. Depends on how
we can't get the top center coming off a torn ACL in the draft. That's where we're picking first.
Buddy, let me look at the consensus draft board. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 cornerbacks are expected to get drafted before the Packers are on the clock. So better nail cornerback 9. Yeah, that's where we're at, man. That's where we're at. Shrine Bowl, NFL Network.
I think this is going to be a very fun offseason because like so many of these guys, like from keep cut decisions, you know, with Rashawn Gary and Quay Walker keeping or you know, letting him go and Igbaré, like there's like, I know they're not going to do it. I still think they could move off of, or they should move off of Aaron Banks. I don't know what they're going to do with Nate Hobbs. Like there's just a lot of that. And then whatever money they potentially save from some of that stuff, you know, how they go about probably getting maybe some release guys in, they're going to have to be really, really smart on the fringes and find some value free agents that have been cut and find some gems in the second, third, fourth rounds. And hopefully get some guys developing as well, because they've got some special team stuff, but they have corner, defensive tackle, offensive line that all need some stuff. We'll be right back.
The offensive line, obviously, there's the glaring hole at center. I think the other four guys are starting next year. Right, Morgan is going to play left tackle. I think the other four starters are like ironclad locked into their spots. Nose tackle,
probably not wrong.
Probably the biggest need outside of center if Ryan does walk out of the building and Ellen Jenkins gets cut, right? So I could see the team doing that. Corner, I do think that they're going to go corner early in this draft, whether it's, you know, the second round pick, third round pick, fourth round pick. I don't know if that they're going to let that guy start this year, though. I mean, again, this is a team that for 20 years, their first round picks have averaged 6 starts a season. And that's including all the injury replacement starts and stuff like that too. What really hurts them is at this point, even if we don't think that they're going to get off the Hobbs contract this offseason, they're unless things change, they're probably going to want to get off of it by 27 when there's less dead cap on it and the salary is going to go up. Keyshawn is on an expiring deal. I don't think that they're going to give Keyshawn an extension. Not because I don't think that they don't like Keyshawn. It's that Keyshawn is like reached a certain age. Like, there's not many guys third contract age who get that third contract in Green Bay. That doesn't happen very often. And I don't think Keyshawn, on that relative scale, right? That bell curve of the guys who imagine, he hasn't played that well, right? And then Carrington's on an expiring contract too. So I think they're going to draft to kind of backfill and protect themselves for 27 more than get a starter for 26. Obviously, things could change if a guy drops to him in the second round, they pick him up, he has a good camp, they just start him. Sure. But
it is interesting. Goody has done a renovation to one position almost every single year, whether it's, you know, when defensive ends where he goes Zadarius, Preston, and Rashawn Gary, whether it's safety where they go, you know, Bullard and McKinney and Williams. Williams, thank you. And they go Amos. Yeah. And they go Amos and Savage in the same offseason. Like, he does running back where they get the draft three. That was before Goody, but three running backs drafted.
They double dipped that linebacker, right?
So, like,
the top 100. There's something in the last draft.
True. There's something that they do full like renovation to almost every year. I am curious if they do something. There's no guarantee that they will, but if they do, what's his pet project to renovate this year? Corner. It'd have to be almost corner offensive line, and I think corner makes the most sense.
Just from a numbers perspective, yeah. Because the nose tackle, the issue isn't really depth. I mean, guys did get hurt and stuff like that down the stretch, and that hurt their depth. But like, they have a ton of Riley, Stackhouse, Brinson, Brooks, Wooden. All those guys are going to be backups for you if you draft a starting nose tackle, right? And all those guys are under contract for 26. That's not a position you want to double dip in. That's one where it's like, we're taking a home run shot early in the draft, or we're probably not going to touch the position, right? Yeah. I think center, there's an obvious void. I don't think you want Jacob Monk starting for you. So I could see you if you let Ryan walk and you're like, let's draft Brian Parker and then some other guy who could potentially play center too. Like, I could see that as a possibility. But corner definitely is one where – you're going to need the bodies, even if not for 26, but for 27. You're going to need contracts. You're going to need contracts.
Big time. All right, Justice. I had like five other things on my list today, but we'll save them. We'll save them for future episodes. Anything else you want to go over? Anything you want to plug on the way out?
Man, I think we're going to because I wanted to write like a whole like what I think of Jonathan Gannon, but that would genuinely probably take like 50,000 words and no one would read it, at least not all the way through, right? So what I've really been doing is I've been like splitting up just like piece by piece, like here is this thing, here is the next thing. So like I started off with the coaching resume, right? Where it's like, this is how the guy came up through the league. And then I did coverages today, which was the quarters article that I wrote. I'll probably look at the fronts pretty soon. We'll talk about personnel and stuff like that down the line. I definitely want to hit it from all angles because I do think, one, people want to read it, right? As long as it's not 50,000 words. And then this is the biggest move that we're going to make this offseason by far.
Because the most important hire of Matt LaFleur's career too, honestly.
Cause it's recent. I think. Yeah.
I just think, cause if
the Barry hire was really important too, but they bombed it.
But if he bombs this one, I don't know that he gets to hire another defensive coordinator is my point. That might be the,
yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Might be the fans, final.
Some fans said that about Halfley and Barry. We've never That's been true. Good, Andy. We've never That's been true. Good. I do love the narrative stuff right now about Schneider and Wolf. And we touched on Wolf a couple, maybe last week, where it's like, Wolf isn't in charge.
I talked on that too, yeah.
The other thing too is like, Wolf's players just got better. Like, it's not the additions that he really made this season. Like, they picked an offensive lineman really early. He hasn't been panning out. I know they added Stephon Diggs. They added the defensive tackle. I'm spacing on his name.
Milton Williams.
Yep. But, like, they rolled over – I think they rolled over twice as much cap as any other team in the NFL this offseason. Like, they had a ton of cap space. They didn't use it all.
Yeah.
It's the players developing. It wasn't, hey, we made this crazy draft and, you know, juice the roster, all this stuff.
No, the draft hasn't actually been great.
Guess what? The Packers are younger than the Patriots.
They're younger than everybody.
We're always going to be younger than everybody. That's the job.
Can you imagine, by the way, that this is not all going to happen. I did talk about this in a couple live shows, but just for funsies. Okay. Let's say for a moment, Brandon McManus, your 34-year-old kicker, gets cut and they go with a younger kicker. There's a 34-year-old out the door. Keyshawn Nixon, age 28. Again, I don't think he's going anywhere, but if they decide to go to
I think they trade him, honestly. Yes. Because I think someone will take up that contract. That's the same thing. Same thing with Hobbs, by the way. I think if they get off of Hobbs, I think it's a trade. I think someone will still pick up that deal.
Interesting. But Nixon, 28. Nick Neiman, 28. Could be somebody that's gone. Rashawn Gary, age 28. Could be somebody that's gone. Aaron Banks, age 28. I don't think they're going to do it. I'd be surprised if they did it, but could be gone. Zane Anderson, age 29. We'll see. Elgton Jenkins, age 30. Probably gone. Those are their players that are like basically aged like 28 and up. There's a better chance that some of those players are actually gone and they get younger there and they're replaced in a lot of ways by 7 draft picks that are 23 years old or younger.
Yeah. So. We were talking about the 31-year-old defensive coordinator potentially coming in to be our linebacker.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he might be older than all of the players. Yeah, that's the job in Green Bay, man.
Matt Orzech. There's a chance that Matt Orzech is the oldest player on the team at age – well, he's 30 now. I don't know when he turns 31, but that he ends up being the oldest player on the team. He could be the only – well, actually, last year even, I don't think they had a position player in their 30s. I guess Elton turned 30 at one point, but that was the only position player that they had in their 30s. Everybody else, well, McManus and Orzech were the specialists that were over age 30.
Can I throw you a fun one?
Go for it.
An old man that I would like the football team to sign.
Calais Campbell? Arizona Cardinal?
Yeah, he would help out on our defensive line.
I asked for him at like the trade deadline last year. I asked for him in free agency. Dude is going to be good no matter what. He can block kicks on special teams.
That was the next thing I was going to say.
He's a run defender. He's a pass rusher. He can still do everything. You can line him still up outside a little bit if you want. He's a great fit in a 3-4 if they go 3-4. He's a great fit in a 4-3 if you go 4-3. If you want to be multiple, dude, that he's just good and he remains good. He was really good this year too. I'm all in.
Yeah. He's the one that I think makes the most sense of. Just because I think you can get him, because I don't think things are going great, especially in this coaching search in Arizona right now, where they're like, who are you down? Like Matt's brother, Matt's out of linebackers coach from last year, and Matt's friend Raheem Morris. It's like,
would you rather have the Cardinals job or the Browns job? Your first time head coach, and
I think Arizona. But they are both bad. I'm not surprised that those are the two jobs that are still open that have been open for a while. I know Buffalo's open.
Raiders are open too, right? So.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I would take Raiders.
I think Raiders are waiting. I think they want QB guru coming in, and then I think it's either going to be Kubiak or Wonderkin from Jacksonville, Odinsky or whatever the heck his name
is. Okay. Interesting. Kubiak would be a good decision for them, especially getting a quarterback with the first overall pick.
Yeah.
Guy in there.
Yeah, I think that's the logic of it. Because I know a lot of people made the Brian Flores, Tom Brady connection early on, but obviously that didn't work out.
I don't even think they interviewed him. I could be wrong on that.
I don't know. I got to ask Bill Williamson. I don't cover the Raiders. I try not to look it in the eye. I think Browns still are going to go Jim Schwartz. Seems like he... Again, I talked about this last week. He went for broke. They basically asked him, like, hey, so we're having talks with other candidates, and we were wondering if we could bring up your name as a potential, like, defensive coordinator type of thing. And he was like, nope, head coach or nothing. And kind of laid his cards out there. And I guess we're watching the staring contest right now. What was the other? Cardinals? No idea. Not highly sought after job though, because I don't think anyone else has interviewed Morris. No one else has interviewed Mike LaFleur.
No.
And I think Campanile.
Yep, Campanelli. Yep.
Got like one other job super early on, but I don't think he ever got like a second interview. So
I don't think so either. Campanelli would be a good hire for them, I feel like, but
they just, yeah, man. I don't know what you do, but at least you're starting off with a blank slate. Cleveland, I think you're starting with Myles Garrett's pissed that you're losing so much, even in the season where he broke the sack record, and you're somehow still not over the Deshaun Watson contract because you keep kicking the line or kicking the can down the line.
It's such a brutal.
And then all the Shaders saying, I mean, the him making Pro Bowl isn't
Pro Bowl. Pro Bowler should do a Sanders.
So, yeah.
That's the craziest thing. That might be the craziest thing that's happened in this entire NFL season is Shedeur Sanders making the Pro Bowl.
I will say Tyler Huntley making the Pro Bowl a couple years ago is probably a little crazier than Shedeur making it. Because didn't Huntley start like three games or something?
Didn't Shedeur start three games? Was it five? No, maybe?
He started more than that. I think he started more than that. But yeah, Cleveland. And then you got to deal with the damn Ivy League general manager giving you personality tests and all sorts of stuff. I get why a bunch of people dropped out of that. They're like, this is not going to be a good time. I know Jimmy Haslam is going to spend a ton of money. That is great. On bad decisions. Very bad process.
Good luck, Cleveland Browns. It's going to be a long, long journey for you. And just don't trade Myles Garrett to the NFC, please. That's all I ask. Just keep him in the AFC.
Please, not to the Eagles, man.
No, or to the Lions or to the Bears.
Oh, no. Don't even – no. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
Why are you putting that out there?
I'm not. I'm saying don't do it. I'm saying don't do it. I'm specifically saying don't do it. Yeah, I don't just – you know what? Keep Myles Garrett at all costs. Just do that. I don't need that dude on a good team. Even in the AFC, just keep him on Cleveland. That would be ideal. That'd be ideal. All right, Justice, get out of here. Follow him at JUMOSQ, acmepackingcompany.com, of course. Anything else you want to plug?
Not yet.
All right.
We are going to write about Gannon this week and whatever staff changes come from this.
Can't wait. I'm looking forward to it. We'll be all reading it. Again, JUMOSQ on social media at Andy Herman NFL for me. That's going to do it for us. But until next time, and as always, go Paco.